Today's shir is Masechta Me'ila Daf Yudalad, and we will begin on Daf Yudgimel on the days at the bottom of the Amid at the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Kan Shibaroi She'ilin Shel Kedesh. If there's a nest on the top of a tree, which is a Hedesh tree, says the Mishnah, Loinen of Loimalin. One may not have Hanor from that nest. However, if he does have Hanor from that nest, it's not considered that he had Mila Behedesh. Shibashera. If there's a nest on the top of an Asherah tree, we know an Asherah tree is an Avodah Zarah tree, certainly something from which one may not have any benefit, as the Torah says, Lo Yidbak B'yotcha Mu'uma Min Acherim, not allowed to have any Hanor from Avodah Zarah. So if Yat is Bekona, so the Mishnah says, if you want to get to that nest, you have to knock it down with a stick. The Rishonim, most Rishonim, Tosfos explain that when the Mishnah says Yat is Bekona, and the Mishnah means to say that that is the only way one may have Hanor from that tree, by knocking it down with a stick. Even if someone is tall enough that he could reach the nest, he may not have Hanor by reaching the nest. He only could have Hanor by knocking it down with a stick. And why Tosfos holds that way will become clearer in Mitzvashem as we learn the Gemara. Although there are Rishonim that seem to hold, and based on the way they understand the Gemara, that you don't have to knock it down with a stick if you're tall enough to reach it, as long as you don't go on the Asherah tree itself, it's mutter to get to the nest that way. Says the Mishnah, Hamagdish es achayrish, if somebody is magdish an entire forest for hegdish, me'al mekulay, there's mila in every part of that forest. The Rishonim give two pshatim that I saw. What is the Mishnah trying to teach us with this din of a magdish es achayrish? One pshat that I saw is that the Mishnah is trying to contrast this din with the din that we began our Mishnah with, that the nest on top of an Hegdish tree is not subject to Mila. Teaches us the Mishnah that in that situation it's not subject to Mila, but if you magdish a forest, it is subject to Mila. Or another pshat that I saw is that this contrasts to the next Mishnah. We're going to learn the Mishnah on the bottom of Dav Yud Dalet Amid Aleph, that if the Hegdish, the Gizborim, buy wood, so only the actual wood is subject to Mila, not the shavings and not the leaves. So it teaches us the Mishnah that that's only when you're buying, when Hegdish buys a piece of wood. Because when Hegdish buys a piece of wood, so they only need the exact part that they used, which is the wood, nothing else. But here, where somebody was magdish an entire field, so somebody was magdish an entire forest, he meant to be magdish every part of the forest, and included in what he was magdish is every part, and if he's moil, it's considered mila in all of the field, in every part of that forest. A word of introduction to the Gemara. The halacha is, as we just said, that Avodah Zarah is also b'hanor. But not only is the halacha that Avodah Zarah is also b'hanor, the halacha is that the Avodah Zarah of a Jew cannot be mevatel Avodah Zarah. An Akum, however, does have the ability to be mevatel Avodah Zarah. And with that halacha will begin the Gemara. Itmar, Avodah Chachamim Shnishtabra B'Eleho, the Avodah Zarah of a Goy that broke on its own. Rabbi Yochanan Masura, Rabbi Yochanan says it remains Osir. Rish Lakish Shalom Materis, Rish Lakish says its mutter is considered Mevotel. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Asura, Rabbi Yochanan holds its Osir. Dleibot Lavayis Kechavim. There was no act of Bittel, and since there was no act of Bittel, it remains Osir. Rish Lakish Shalom Materis, Rish Lakish on the other hand holds its mutter, because Meimar Amar, because he says, the guy says to himself, he gufa loy matzla. If the Avodah Zarah did not have the ability to save itself, because it's obviously broke, le'di matzla, does it have the ability to save me? And therefore, it's considered bottle, it's considered nullified, even though there was no act of bittle. And there's a machlokes amongst the mefarshim, how to understand this machlokes. The Mishnah Lamelech seems to explain the machlokes, that there's another question in the Rishonim. What would be the halacha if there's a suffix if the Avodah Zarah is bottle? And the Mishnah Lamelech seems to learn that that really is the basis of the machlokes of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish says, Rish Lakish will take the opinion that if there's a suffix if it's bottle, it is bottle. And here, therefore, since there's reason, there's strong reason to believe that the guy doesn't consider this Avodah Zarah anymore because it's broken, that is enough to make the Avodah Zarah bottle. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, we have to know for certain that the Avodah Zarah is bottled. And anything else, the Avodah Zarah remains an Avodah Zarah. The Sfas-Emes has a simpler explanation of the Machloikas. His explanation is that the Machloikas is what constitutes a Maisa Bittl. Where Rabbi Yochanan holds that only a real Maisa Bittl, where the guy did a Maisa Bittl, is considered a Bittl. Anything else is not. Rish Lakish holds, even if there wasn't an express Maisa Bittl done, it's still, the Avodah Zarah could still be bottled. Chazanish explains that the Machloikis between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is not in a situation where it was shattered into small pieces, where there even Rabbi Yochanan will agree that the Avodah Zarah is bottled, but it's referring to a situation where the Avodah Zarah is left with larger pieces. Rish Lakish holds it doesn't make a difference. As soon as the Avodah Zarah is broken, it's considered bottle. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that to be considered bottle, it has to be completely destroyed. Anything else is not. Of course, the Mefarshim ask, according to the opinion of Rish Lakish, where the guy didn't break the Avodah Zarah, it just broke. But why would that not be considered Varm Shebelev? We have not heard the Akum say that this Avodah Zarah should not be an Avodah Zarah. And we have a rule all over that Dvarim Shebelev Einam Dvarim. We didn't hear the guy being Mevatel the Avodah Zarah, so why is it considered Mevatel? So some of Farshim explain that in a situation where there's Umdana, in a situation where there's every reason to say that this is what the person meant, there we don't have a problem with Dvarim Shebelev. And that is the basis of Rish Lakish's opinion. We're so certain, the Gemara is so certain, says the Gemara in explaining Rish Lakish, that no guy will continue worshipping an Avodah Zarah that couldn't save itself. And that's why it's not considered Dvarim Shebelev. Another pshat that I saw is that the Akum only makes the Avodah Zarah into an Avodah Zarah as long as it's whole. But when the Avodah Zarah is not whole, from the outset, it was not the intention of the Akum that it should be considered an Avodah Zarah, and therefore when it breaks, it automatically is not considered an Avodah Zarah. The Gemara Masechta Avodah Zarah, Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, asked the question. Here we're saying that, according to Rish Lakish, an Avodah Zarah that breaks on its own is not considered an Avodah Zarah. So ask the Gemara, the Brisa says over there that if Yisrael was mevatel the Avodah Zarah of an Akum, it's not considered botel. Ask the Gemara, according to Rish Lakish, if just Avodah Zarah breaking by itself is enough for Avodah Zarah to be botel, certainly why should that be any less or any different than when a Jew was mevatel the Avodah Zarah? So Bai explains that indeed, if a Jew would completely break the Avodah Zarah of an Akum, the halacha is indeed that it would be bottled. When the Braisa, that the Gemara over there quotes, that when a Jew is mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a Jew, it's not bottled, it's referring to a situation where the Jew did not break off any piece of the Avodah Zarah, and that's why it's not bottled. Rava gives a different teretz. Rava says that indeed, according to Rish Lakish, if a Avodah Zarah that breaks by itself is bottled, certainly if a Jew breaks the Avodah Zarah, it ought to be bottled. He says the reason the Braisa says that it's not bottle when a Jew was mevatel it is because it's referring to a situation where it's a gezeiras drabonon. For Chazal were concerned that maybe a moment before the Jew is mevatel the avodah zarah, he intends to be koinet, to take ownership. And as we said earlier, the avodah zarah of a Jew can never become bottle. So the Gemara uses our Mishnah as part of the machloikis between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. I say Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. I ask Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. We just learned in our Mishnah, Hakanch Baroish Ilan Shal Hegdish, a nest on top of a tree which is Hegdish. The halacha is a nen of a mal. One may not have benefit from that nest, but if he did, he's not oivim meila. Shiva Shera. If it's on top of an Asherah tree, Yatis Bekona, he should knock it off with a stick. Now, ask the Gemara. My love, the Gemara is assuming that this nest that was made on the top of the tree was made from branches of that very tree. And the Gemara is assuming that breaking off the branches that are broken off from the tree by a bird to build its nest are equivalent to a avodah zarah that broke by itself. So, our Mishnah says Reish Lakish, that the avodah zarah, that the nest on top of the Asherah tree was built from the wood of that tree. Ditma migufa. And the Mishnah's paskini, the katani, the Mishnah's saying, yatas mekana, that if you knock off that nest, you'll be allowed to use that nest. Either nest was built from wood from an Asherah tree. How could you use that nest? It must be because birds building a nest from wood of an Asherah tree are equivalent to a avodah zarah that broke. And therefore, it's no longer osur bahana. So it's a riot to my pshat, says Reish Lakish, to my opinion, that a avodah zarah that broke by itself is no longer considered a avodah zarah. So ask the Mefarshim, if Reish Lakish at this point is explaining that our Mishnah is referring to a situation where the nest was built from the tree, and that from the Asherah tree, and that was mevatel the Asherah tree. So then, why is the Mishnah only saying that the nest is mutter? The Mishnah should have said that even the tree itself is mutter because it became bottled by the being broken when the birds took wood to build the nest. So Oyla Shloima answers that the tree and the branches don't necessarily have the same halacha. And therefore, even though the tree, even though the wood, the branches are considered no longer by the Zara, that has nothing to do with the actual tree. And he brings a raya from the din that we quoted and the din that we're going to learn in the Mishnah in a few moments on the bottom of the summit, that we see that the wood and the shavings and the leaves of the wood are halachically considered two separate entities. Here too, the branches are not any more avodah zarah, but that has nothing to do with the tree itself. Other mefarshim say that the Akum says, yes, the branches are not an avodah zarah. The fact that a bird could break those branches and use them to build a nest, it's clearly an indication that it's not an avodah zarah. But that doesn't mean that the Akam no longer thinks that the tree is an avodah zarah. He thinks that the actual tree remains an avodah zarah. Other mefarshim explain that Chazal made a gzeira coin to Reish Lakish on the tree itself, because on the branches, it's easier to see there's a difference between the branches and the actual Asherah tree. But on the tree, where it's not noticeable that it was broken, Chazal said that the tree should remain awesome. Another pshat, one more pshat that I saw, is that indeed, if branches are broken off the Asherah tree, those branches are mevatel from being an avodah zarah, and the tree itself. This commissioner said it would be referring to a situation where after this occurred, the Akum went and said, still the Asherah is an avodah zarah. That re-institutes the Asherah as being an avodah zarah, And that's what even Rish Lakish will obviously agree, that the Sheira remains Asur. But what's relevant to our Shir at this point is that it seems from here very clear that the Mishnah's paskening, that the branches that are broken, which is similar to the Avodah Zarah breaking by itself, is no longer considered an Avodah Zarah, and that's why one can have Hanah, one could use the nest made out of those branches. So Rabbi Yochanan defends himself. Loi, the Aisa Eitzim Alma. We're not going to say that the Mishnah is talking about branches that came from the actual Sheira tree. The branches that came from the actual Sheira tree remain Avodah Zarah, and therefore you cannot knock off them off. You can only use them because the reason the nest in our Mishnah is mutter is because that nest came from a different tree. Interesting, machlokes rishonim. What would be the halacha if we don't know from where those branches came? The Rambam seems to say that we could assume that they came from elsewhere, and therefore the nest is mutter. The Ravid says that no, until we know for certain that those branches came from elsewhere, we have to be concerned that they came from this tree, and therefore remain osur, like the tree is osur because it's an asher tree. Ask the Gemara, Ihachi, if we're explaining that our Mishnah is referring to a nest that was made not from the branches of the actual tree that the nest is on, but rather from branches from a different tree. So ask the Mishnah, ask the Gemara, why in the first din of the Mishnah, Amai shall hedish a nen of a ma'alim, why is the halacha that one may not have benefit if it's not from this tree? It's not hegdish, and you should be allowed to have benefit from that nest, even though it's from on top of the hegdish tree. Ella, how must we explain that the Mishnah is referring b'gedulim haboim achnikan, that the nest was built with branches that grew after they were magdish the tree? The Kesavar and the Tan of our Mishnah holds, like the Tanakama that we learned in the previous Mishnayos, that Eima Alam Begdulim, that Begdule Hegdish, it's not considered Hegdish. And therefore, the Gedulim are not Osir with Ni'ila because they're Gedule Hegdish. So, if that's the case, we have a Raya, we're back to where we started, that the nest by the Hegdish tree was made from the tree itself. Similarly, that we'll have to say that the nest on the Asherah tree was made from the Asherah tree. And that again will be a raya to Reish Lakish's opinion and a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. And now the Gemara goes a step further, that besides bringing a raya that from the Hegdish tree, that we have to explain that our Mishnah is referring to a situation that the nest was built from the tree itself that it came from, we're going to bring a raya from the Asherah tree itself that it must be referring to a situation that the nest was built from this actual Asherah tree and not from another tree. Hachanan Mestabra, that the nest on the top of the Asherah tree was built from the Asherah tree wood itself. Dis al kedaitach, for if you're going to say, says the Gemara, the Eisim Alma, that the wood that Asherah nest was made out of came from a different tree, so that Amai Yatas Mekana, what is the Mishnah Paskin that you could only get to that nest by knocking it off? If this nest was built from a different tree, and that other tree is not a Asherah tree, Lishko Mishko, you should be able to take it out right with your hands. Why does the Mishnah say that Yatas Bekana? The fact that the Mishnah says that it's Yatas Bekana must be because the nest was built from that Asherah tree, and therefore to show that you can't have Anor from the Asherah tree, but you can have Anor from the nest, we tell you don't touch it, but only knock it off. And as Rishonim go on to explain, if it's built from wood from another tree, so it's very obvious that this is different wood than the wood that this nest is on. And therefore, just because you could take the nest, no one will makes a mistake that you could use the Asherah tree. Only because this nest was built from the wood, from this actual Asherah tree, the Chazal need to make a gzeira and say that even though you're allowed to use the nest, because it's no longer Avodah Zarah, still, since it's so similar to the very tree that it comes from, and that tree may not be used, therefore the halacha is that you shouldn't touch the nest itself. You should only knock it off with a stick. But again, we now have a raya that, to Reish Lakish's opinion, says the Gemara, and this is the girsa of Tosfos, the girsa that we have printed in our Gemara, is the girsa of Tosfos, and that's the girsa that we're going to learn with. The Mishnah is referring to a situation, says Rabbi Yochanan, that the nest was built from wood that came from a different tree. Or my yatis. And what does the Mishnah mean that you should knock it down with a stick? Yatis afroichen. We're not speaking about the nest itself. We're talking about the afroichen in the nest, which are permitted for benefit, but they should not be removed by hand. Should be knocked down, because the nest itself remains osur bahana, because people don't necessarily understand that this is wood from a different tree, and people may come to use that very, come to climb up the tree. So as we said, according to Tosfos, what Ravu has come to say is that the wood that was built to make these nests is wood that came from a different tree. And the nest itself is osur, both by the Asherah tree and by the Hegdish tree. The birds are mutter. And the Rifarshim go on to explain this girsa. Because if we're going to say that this nest came from a different tree, why is the halacha that it's osur b'hana? So the answer is, because people, if they're going to, Chazal said that if we're going to allow you to use the nest made from a different tree, we're concerned that you may come to use the nest that was made from this very tree. And therefore Chazal said that the nest itself is mutter. And therefore Chazal, when they did allow you to take the birds, only allowed you to knock off those birds with a stick, but not touch the birds themselves, because again they wanted you to stay away from the nest. The question that comes up is that before we said that we're not concerned if the tree is from elsewhere, and now we are concerned. So answer the Rishonim, that before we were focused on the nest. And when we're focused on the nest, says Tosfos, a person could easily get to the nest without climbing on the tree. And therefore, if the entire issue was the nest, and we're not worried about you climbing up to the tree to get to the nest, so when the nest is mutter, it should be completely mutter. Now, however, we're saying that the nest always remains osur. What? And the only thing that's mutter are the birds. The birds, Chazal, were concerned that you can't get to them without climbing up the tree. And therefore, Chazal made a blanket rule that in all situations, you could only use the birds by knocking them off with a stick. So according to this explanation, the halacha of an Asherah and the halacha of a Hegdish tree are identical. Amalei Rav Yaakov Rav Yirmiya, Afroichim kan v'kan b'tarim, the birds themselves are always mutter. Bayim, and the eggs, which are so much more connected to the nest, as we'll explain in a moment, are always asur. And as the Rishayim explain, that even though what comes out now is that the din of the Mishnah, that when we learned the Mishnah, it seemed that the din of a nest, the din by an Asherah tree, and the din by a Hegdish tree are different. Actually, they are not different. And in both situations, the nest is Asur, the Afroichim are Mutter, and the Bayim are Asur. The reason, says the Ritva, the Mishnah chose to say each din by the case that it did, is the din that it, the reason the Mishnah told us that the Bayim are Asur by Hegdish, to teach us that even though Ein Me'ila B'Gdule Hegdish, and certainly Ein Me'ila B'Gdule Asherah, still it's Asur B'Hano. And on the other hand, the din that the Afroichim are Mutter, Chazal wanted to show us, the Mishnah wanted to show us that even by Avodah Zarah, which is typically considered Ma'os, disgusting, still the Afroichim are Mutter. Why are the Bayim Asur? Why don't the Bayim have the same din as the Afroichim? So the Rishonim give a number of explanations. The Rashi learns that since the Bayim are in their place, they can't go anywhere, so that's why they're considered like the nest. Tysus explains that since the eggs, people are concerned they shouldn't fall and crack, so they're much more connected to the tree, and if the tree is Asur, so too will the Bayim remain Asur. Another pshat, which is very similar, is that the tree is considered a basis to the Bayim. They're not considered a basis to the Afroichim, and therefore, since the tree, which is an Asherah or Hegdish, is a basis, that's why the Bayim remain Asur. One more point makes the Gemara. Amar of Ashi, Im Afroichim Tzrichim Lima, if the chicks are so young that they still need the mother, even though they already have developed into a Afroichim, the Bayim Damis are considered like Bayim. So just to summarize, according to Rish Lakish, the Asherah and the Hegdish in our Mishnah is talking about a case where the nest was built from the actual tree, and therefore by Hegdish the nest is Asur because it's Gedule Hegdish, so it's Asur not Banoah and not Benila. By an Asherah, because they were broken off, they're not considered an Avodah Zarah, and that's why the nest is Mutter. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the nest and our Mishnah were made from branches that come from a different tree, and by both of them, the nest are Asur B'Hano, because Chazal made a Gezerah that one should not have Hano from the nest, because if we have Hano from the nest, people may come to have Hano from the actual tree, which is Asur Al Tzegdish or Tzasherah. But in the chicks that are found in the Asherah tree, and as we said, the same will be by a Hegdish tree, they remain Mutter, but the Bayim, the eggs, are Asur. Says the Mishnah, Hagizbarim Shalachu Eitzim, if the Hegdish bought wood, Mayalim Be'Eitzim, one uses the actual wood, he would be over Me'ila. However, Ve'ei Me'alim Lo'i B'Shifri V'Lo'i B'Nivya, not with the shavings or with the leaves, are not subject to Me'ila. And as we explained earlier, because when Hegdish buys the tree, their intent is only to take ownership of the actual wood, which is what they need, not to take any they have no intent to use the shavings or the leaves, and that's why they don't become Hegdish, and since they don't become Hegdish, they're not subject to Me'ila the Hegdish. Our Gemara begins a discussion of what happens when they built different projects in the Beis HaMikdash and they had to pay the workers. How were they able to do so? And we're going to again learn this Gemara as Tysus learns the Gemara. And a few words of introduction are needed. There are different ways that Hegdish gets money. There's the Machzor HaShekel, which we know was given every year, was put into the Lishka, those funds were under the control of Hegdish. And Hegdish, the Gizborim can do whatever they want with that money. But then there's also money that a person donates money for Bedek Habayis. And our Gemara is assuming that when a person donates money for Bedek Habayis, he wants that his money should only be used for specific tangible projects. His money should not be used to pay wages, to pay for different services. And therefore, our Gemara begins with an issue. If someone is going to buy, if they're going to make, somebody donates money to the Bedek Habayis, and they're going to use that money to build something, so there's no problem using the Bedek Habayis money to buy, to build a project, to buy some materials. The problem, however, is how will the workers get paid? Because as we just explained, workers, they didn't use Bedek Habayis money to pay workers. So says the Gemara, Amishmu, because of that issue, when they needed to begin a project of building something in the Beis HaMikdash, Bain and Bechol, they would not be magdish the materials that they built with. Either they borrowed money to buy the materials, or they built, bought the materials on credit, and therefore those materials were not hegdish. Only after they finished the building, Magdishon, they were Magdish them, and they were Magdish them by at that point paying Hegdish money for that project. That Hegdish money now became Chulin, and that money could be used to pay both the people who they bought the materials from and the workers. Because as we said, they could not pay the workers directly with that money. My Tama. Because man de mas snadif mas makadish lo, somebody who is manadif money for Bedek Habayis is magdish the money for Omar, and therefore what the way to be able to get that we should be able to use money and have money to pay the workers is teichum kedushas mas opinion. When the project is finished, they take the money and they use it to pay for that project, and the money now becomes chulin. And that money is used v'yav leil umnim b'scharim to pay the workers their salary. Meisvei asked the Gemara. We know that every day in the Beis HaMikdash they would do the avoid of the Torahs. And as we learned in Masechta the Krisis, every year they would make 368 portions of Torahs. So they were certain to have leftover Torahs, Moisek Tyrus, as we learned in Masechta Krisis, for two reasons. One is there were 365 portions corresponding to the 365 days of the year, and that had three extra portions, which the Kohen Gadol used in the Avodah of Yom Kippur that he went into Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Tyrus. But even though they had these three extra portions, as we learned in Masechta Krisis, typically the Kohen Gadol didn't need to use more than a half a portion to do his Avodah Yom Kippur, and therefore they were always left over with approximately 2.5 extra portions. But actually, in most years, they had even more leftovers, because although there are 365 days in the solar year, there are only 354 days in the lunar year that we follow. And the halacha is that all of the Kabbonis Tzibur, which the Ktiris is in that category, can only be bought from funds from this year's Machzis HaShekel. As we learned in Masechta Shkolim, Rosh Chodesh Nissan is when they began using the new Machzis HaShekel, and all Kabbonis from Rosh Chodesh Nissan on had to come strictly from the new Machzis HaShekel fund. And so if you have Ktiris that's left over, as we just said, there's certainly going to be left over Ktiris every year. They can't use the Ktiris that was bought and manufactured from last year's funds for this year, because you can't use last year's Machzis HaShekel fund for this year's Machzis HaShekel fund. So what the Gemara now begins to explain is that they had an elaborate scheme how they could take that leftover Ketoris, which came from last year's funds, and turn them into being used with this year's funds. So says the Gemara, Meister, we learned in a Mishnah Masech Tishkolim, Meister Ketoris Ma'ayosimba, what did they do with this leftover Ketoris, that they should be able to use it, even though it was purchased from last year's fund? Ha'mafrishim Schar Umnim. There were people that worked in the Beis HaMikdash, and they would take money from the Shiori HaLishka, and again, with the pshat that we said before, it's very understandable. Here they're not using Bedek Abayis funds that we said before. Bedek Abayis funds were not used for paying wages. Here they're using Lishka funds. Lishka money can be used to pay salaries. So what they would do is they would take the money from the Lishka for on behalf of the Umnim. And as the Rishonim point out, they naturally never gave that money to Umnim, as we'll see. What they did was they just set aside money from that Lishka for the workers, and now that money is no longer Hegdish, because that's the salary of the Umnim. Then they would take the Moisak Tyrus, and they would exchange the Moisak Tyrus for that money, and then the Noisak Noisak Umnim, they would then give the Moisak Tyrus to the workers, and then they would buy back the Moisak Tyrus, which they just gave to the workers as their salary. They would buy it back from them with the new Lishka money, with this year's money, and that's how this Moisak Tyrus got the Kedusha of this year's money rather than, and could be used again this year. Of course, the Mefarshim ask that why did they have to go through this elaborate procedure? Why couldn't they just sell the Ketoris and purchase it back? Or couldn't they have just given the Ketoris directly to the workers for the salary? Why did they go through all these extra steps? So Mefarshim will explain, because we're speaking about the Ketoris, we're speaking about something that's Kadosh, so we want to keep it in the most respectable manner. And to go sell it on the open market, or to go use it itself straight to pay salary, would not be showing the proper respect. And that's why they did it in this fashion, which was in a much more respectful fashion, Another pshat that the Rishonim say is that the Moisak Tyrus did not always equal the salary. So since it didn't always equal the salary, we're going to have to add different money to the Moisak Tyrus. So that's why they didn't want to do it that way. Or another pshat is that to use the Tyrus, which is something that belongs on the Beis HaMikdash, something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, as salary, straight salary, is also inappropriate. We've learned many times the halacha that anything that can be used on the Mizbeach should be used strictly to be kept on the Mizbeach, not for any other purpose. But ask the Gemara, if we have what Shmuel said at the beginning, V'mai l'chai le'abinyan, why can't they just take the Moisak Tyrus and use it to pay for a binyan and for any new building, and that's how it'll become no longer Kodesh? It was used for payment for one Hegdish project to another. One Hegdish should be used for another Hegdish project, and then we'll buy it back. Answers the Gemara, to like a binyan. We're speaking about a year where there was no building project that they could go through this procedure. We're saying that what are we going to do with this Moisak Tyrus? We're ultimately going to designate it as a salary. So obviously there was a project. Answers the Gemara, the Lekabinyan Kishimos. As Tyrus explains, yes, there were projects that we needed to pay salaries with. But it wasn't a situation where we had the project itself being, the tangible project being that valuable. It's the salary that was expensive. Tyson gives an example of a painter, where the paint itself is not so expensive. But when you have a real expert painter that knows how to draw a beautiful picture, that the paint, that the painter gets paid more than the material, and therefore there was no building to do this process with. Ask the Gemara, Vamishmul, why is this an issue? Hamishmul Hegdish Shavimana, Shchila Shavapruta, that even if you have a Hegdish that's worth a lot, that's worth a mana, you could redeem it on a pruta, and it'll be mchul, it'll be considered acceptable. So even if the project is not worth as much as the Maisik Tyrus, it shouldn't make a difference. Even if the Maisik Tyrus is so much more expensive than the Binyan, it shouldn't make a difference. You could still be paid it on any amount. Answers the Gemara, Hani Mili, when do we rely on such a form of pidyon? Only the Eved. But at Chila, we don't. The Farshim explain that why is it the halacha that you could be paid the hegdish even just as much as it's worth, even just on a Shavapruta? One explanation the Rishonim give is because Eidai Noah lehegdish, the din of Eidai Noah doesn't apply by hegdish. Another pshat that they say is because by hegdish it isn't a concept of buying, where you can't buy something that's worth $1,000 for a penny. It's a question of chalipin. By chalipin, the two objects that are being bartered need not be equal in value. Furthermore, the Mefarshim explain that this din of l'chatchilim b'di'evid is only said on the person who was only said to the person who was magdish, who was magdish the item. But if somebody else is paid an item that is hegdish, he has no right to be paid it, that there is no din that you can be paid it on much less of the value. And I saw two explanations as to why. One is since he was the person that was magdishit, so he retained some level of ownership. Another pshat is because since he could always be shoyl on that hegdish, he could always have that hegdish annulled. The halacha is that therefore he has this right to be paid it on much less than its value. The Mefarshim say the nafkamina between these two pshatim is that what will be if it already is in the hands of Hegdish? If the vart is that he was the original owner, and that's why he has this right, so it makes a difference where this item currently is. But if the thing is because he could be shoyl on it, he could only be shoyl on it until he gave it to Hegdish. But once he gave it to Hegdish, he can't be shoyl on it. The Rishonim also ask that we learned the Gemara Masechta Erechin, that the Gemara Masechta Erechin says that if somebody is magdish something b'zman hazeh, he has a real issue because we have no hegdish. And the question, and the Gemara says, an animal should be left to die. If it's fruit or clothing, they should be left to rot. Money should be taken to the Yam HaMelech. But the question is, why is such a big deal? If Shmuel is telling us that you could be paid it, a pox m'shava pruta. So according to what we just said, that this rule of hegdish ashchila shava pruta is mechulah is only by the owner. So the Gemara Masechta Erechin is very understandable, because that din isn't speaking when it was the owner. Other Rishonim make a difference between metatlin and karka, that by karka, everybody will agree, karka of hegdish, you cannot be paida. By karka, Chazal allowed it to be paida on Shavapruta, by metatlin, Chazal was strict. But now, the Gemara says a different reason. Rapap Amar, the reason why when they built the project for Hegdish, they were careful not to let it become Hegdish until they finished the project, is for a whole different reason. Hana Tam the Bani B'chol, says Rapap Amar, when the Torah Malach Asharis, we know that who builds a base of Hegdish? People, not Malachim. Amri and Chazal were concerned, they were boil Mizgav Zagalayim. Maybe while they're building, they'll sit down on the material. Or others say he'll sit in the shade of the material, and I'll have Hanor from Hegdish. Ibana Bekutcher. So if these materials are already Hegdish, it'll turn out Ishtaka to Kamar Bekutcher. So that's why they were careful not to be Magdish the material until they finished the project. Tanan asked the Gemara on this Pshat, how Gzbarim Shalach Leisim, we learned in our Mishnah that if the treasure of Hegdish bought wood, Mayalim Ben, there's Mila. They Mayalim, but there's no Mila, like the Shufya, but like the Indivya. Not with the shavings, nor with the leaves. But ask the Gemara, Vamay Mayalim Ben, why if somebody used that wood, is he over Mila? Hachanami Levit Bechol. Did we say that the wood, they didn't Magdish it until they finished working with it? Because, as the Papa just taught us, we're concerned Diva Boil Mizgav is Ogalayim, because we're concerned that they may end up sitting on it. V'shtekach to Kamar B'Kotshin. So obviously, they were, if our Mishnah says that we're not allowed to use the wood, it's obvious that they were Magdish the wood immediately. But if they were Magdish the wood immediately, if they were not Magdish the wood immediately, so why would there be Mila? And he was saying that they weren't Magdish the wood until they finished the project. Amra Papa, Ibe Eitz Nemekan Ve'eluch, if they buy wood to not use immediately, Hachinami, they were careful not to be Magdish it immediately. Elkit Namas Nisan, Amish is referring to Eitz Nemekan, to the wood that they're going to use immediately. Since they're going to use the wood immediately, so they were Magdish the wood. They're not concerned. And that's why the Mishnah says that that wood is Hegdish. If somebody uses that wood, he will be over Me'il. So I saw the Mepharshim ask that the Pasuk says that when Yaakov Avinu was running away from Esav, the famous episode, the Yikach Me'adne Hamokoy, the Yosem Mereshoysov. And Rashi says that those Avonim were the stones from the Mizbeach that Avraham Avinu had used for Mizbeach for Yitzchak. So the question is that those stones had Kedusha. So how could Yaakov Avinu use those stones as a pillow? So the Panav Yosef says that indeed Yaakov Avinu did Me'ila, but the halacha is, as we're still going to learn in Amasechta, that when somebody does Me'ila, the Hegdish loses its status of Hegdish. And that's why Yaakov Avinu, after he did the Me'ila, afterwards he realized he made a mistake, and that's why the Pasuk says that he should make it into Hegdish again. The Farshim have a problem with this pshat, because the halacha is that an item that was used for chulin, you should not be Magdish. So the Magen Avraham says that it was a situation of Pikuach Nefesh, and that's why he was allowed to use those stones. He put those stones to protect him from any wild beast. And another Teretz, he says, that when is something considered Me'ila Behegdish? When he uses it in a normal fashion. But here, by putting the stones as a pillow around his head, that is Shloi Kederech, and Shloi Kederech is not considered Me'ila Behegdish. Hadron Lok Falat Chatos, Hadron Lok Falat Chatos, Hadron Lok Falat Chatos.